Welcome to Mastermind's Parent Power podcast for parents of children with autism. Learn from fellow parents, professionals, and other individuals who have helped to support, nurture, and create the tapestry of autism support and services. The ultimate goal of Mastermind is to empower parents and provide them with the tools they need to help their child reach their full potential. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Kelly. I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast. Kelly Birmingham is here with us today. She's going to share great information. Kelly is a BCBA. She is also a step parent of an adult child who's on the spectrum. Let's get started from the beginning, Kelly. Can you share with us, how did you get started in the world of autism?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Sure. I always start off by talking about how my mother instilled in my upbringing the need to give back to our community. She ran a preschool, and this is, where I'm old. This is in the 70s, late 70s, and she ran a preschool, and she always made it an inclusive preschool, whereas if kids wanted to come to her preschool of all, abilities, she would have them at her preschool, and she would have my sister and I, as we got older, we'd volunteer at the preschool or the after school programs. So she always instilled that. When I was in middle school, she had me go and volunteer at a new cerebral palsy center that had opened up. And so she just always had us working and volunteering around folks with unique abilities. And so it's funny, when I went to college, I actually had planned to go into medical school. I wanted to be a doctor. And I got into some of the heavy math, and it was not for me. And so I switched my sophomore year into psychology, and it just really fit for me. So I went on from my bachelor's degree into grad school in behavioral psychology. And now we're hitting in the 90s. And so my very first job out of school was working at a nonprofit in Massachusetts, helping adults that had grown up in state institutions. So we're at 95 now. And, prior to this, if you go back into the, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, if you were given a diagnosis of, at that time, it was called mental retardation, or even cerebral palsy, or maybe Down syndrome, some kind of disability, your doctors told you to put your child into this institution and let those people take care of the child. Don't worry your little head about it, Mom. There are great documentaries about that have happened over the years. And it was my first job, is helping these adults with intellectual disabilities, deaf and blind, autism, move out of those state institutions into their own group home and community living. And so I did that for years. And then around 2000, I started in Massachusetts and Maine. There were laws called Katie Beckett laws, which then started to provide wraparound services at the time for kids at home. So now it was about, hey, we're not being reactive in this community, we're being proactive, right? So now we started working in people's homes and helping their kids. And so I just sort of, at that point, I just fell in love with ABA. I went to, the BCBA came around in 1999, right? The BACB rather, right?
Right.
And so I waited before I took my exam, because all the big players took their exam and, they scored on a bell curve. So I waited till 2003. So in 2003, I sat for my exam. I took it with paper and pencil and filled in my little dots on my paper and turned it in. And so I have been certified since 2003. So this is what I've always done.
Wow. And that's fantastic. I love how you mentioned how your upbringing really supported helping other people. And that directly influenced how you perceived life and wanted to help others, which is great. I find it interesting how you started in the adult world and then kind of worked backwards.
Yes.
So you got to see the end result of individuals who did not necessarily get the highest quality of services all the years, then moving backwards into homes and helping children and youngsters, as well as the parents, right, alongside the parents and family, and move upward like that. At which point did things shift, and did you become a step parent to an individual with autism, and how did that shift your perspective?
That's such a great question, because I'm a firm believer you don't have to be a parent to be a good BCBA, but you do have to have the ability to understand a caregiver or parent's perspective. And I can think back, I was a new BCBA, it was 2003, 2004. I had moved from Massachusetts to California, where I am now, and I worked in some schools, and then I started my own practice. And I started my own practice in 2004 doing group or early intervention and group ABA, because I felt pretty strongly that while one-on-one ABA was effective, kids needed to learn how to learn. They needed to learn how to learn in a group format because that they were going to go to school, right? And that was, we needed to teach them those learning to learn skills. So that was my practice. And I had my practice for 13 years. And in doing that, when I was trying to get my practice up and going in my community, I started doing a lot of volunteer work, right? Back to my mom. And so I started volunteering and I sat on some different boards and I helped start a sports league here in California called Spirit League, which was a sports league for kids. I helped found a school for kids on the autism spectrum, middle school and high school. And in doing all of that, most of the time, the folks doing that work have some kind of relation to autism, right? It's usually parents, it's usually siblings of kids. And my mother just instilled this like purposeful life in me. And so I would always be around these families. And so I did actually meet, people might've known me as Kelly McKinnon in the East Coast. And for years I was Kelly McKinnon. I had a practice with Kelly McKinnon. And then I met my husband in 2006. We weren't married yet because he was also on the boards of Spirit League and the school we founded. He runs that school now. He's the executive director. And he had a daughter on the spectrum. And at that time she was 13. And so I have known her, Melanie is my stepdaughter, since she was 13. She's now 33. I think the perspective changed, right? So when I first was with Melanie and Bill, and we made, we took it slow, and Bill had, my husband had raised Melanie on her own. He was a single dad and he lived with her. And, to bring someone, when I moved into the home, she had just graduated high school, 18. And we knew each other for a while, then we started dating, and then we made the slow transition of me moving into the home. And that was really painful for all of us for a few reasons. One, Melanie was used to her routine. She was used to her routine and the way things were. Her dad was used to raising her a certain way. And here I come in as not only a stepmom, which has its own set of challenges, but a BCBA. And so I have my husband saying, okay, my goal is to get this young lady independent and living on her own. So what do? I started right away using my strategies, right? I started all kinds of different strategies and techniques, and it made Melanie furious. And it made my husband and I, we fight a lot because we weren't agreeing on the parenting styles at all. And it took and that's very common, right? It took years later for me to sit back and go, wait a minute, because the biggest takeaway I had was I thought everything had to be a teachable moment, everything. Never would I let anything go. And he would say, Kelly, I'm exhausted. I don't want to battle this battle today. Can't we just take a break? I'd be like, no, we're wasting precious moments of time. And it took a really long time to just understand that, like, not every time were we going to follow through with a plan, and not every time were we going to, like, make it a teachable moment.
Right. And that takes an incredible amount of self-reflection, being able to look back and say, I wanted the best, but maybe I wasn't doing the best, but I can do better. So what kind of advice would you give to parents? So parents who are maybe younger, have a younger child with autism, parents who are newer at this, starting out at whichever point in their child's life as it might be. Sometimes it's a young child, sometimes it's already almost adolescence. What would your advice be coming from that angle of looking back and saying, not every moment has to be a teachable moment?
I think I actually did this exercise in the last 2 years where I went back and talked to families that I had worked with when their children were 4 or 5 and now are in their 20s and said, what are the takeaways? And a few things that I, and, you know, and reflected on my own life, and a few things I learned is, you know, our kids continue to grow. So my stepdaughter's 33 and she continues to make progress. And, you know, we sort of all think we have to have it all solved by the time they're 18. There are, you know, there are things that she's doing now at 33 that I never thought she would do 10 years ago. I never thought she'd get there. And she's still doing it. So a lot of it is like the long game, right? It doesn't have to be solved in the first few years. Like, you have to always have your eye on the very long game and also know what your expectation is. But the other thing is what the child's expectation is, right? So, you know, as one of the things that Bill and I always wanted was for Melanie to have friends, and her interpretation and version of friends are different than our version. And that was a really hard lesson for us to resolve. And she would tell you she's very happy and has lots of friends. And we would say she never spends time with anyone. And so, like, managing expectations about what you want for your child, probably any parent, and what your child wants is a big one.
Wow. Have you ever worked with parents who are pursuing a cure? And what kind of advice would you give to professionals who might be working with parents who are interested in researching or attempting other, even unproven methods of therapy to help their child?
Oh, many times. Many times. I've worked with a lot of families, particularly, you know, in the early 2000s here in California, there were a lot of movements of treatments. You know, back in those days, people were using chelation therapy, oxygen treatment, you know, blood infusions. And I'm not here to say they work or don't work, but I just know that there were a lot of families that were doing lots of other things. Families are going to try anything and everything. And I personally never discouraged anyone. And I know that can be frowned upon in our industry. I just said, you're going to do what you're going to do for your child, but let's keep data and track it and see if it feels effective or not effective, right? And just because the data shows it's not effective doesn't mean families don't think, like, I've had a lot of families where I say the data is not showing any change, but the family saying we see a change. And so, like, as a practitioner, behavior analyst, you know, spending time managing also the parent expectations. And if it's something that's not harming their child and they're saying this worked for us, you know, who am I to say, no, it didn't, right? But I have my data and I can prove it. I will say I've worked with a number of children and I've spent some time trying to research how to tell if how successful a child's going to be based on their autism, right? And there are studies about it. There are some key skills that are sort of indicative of maybe doing better in your life. So, for instance, I have kids that I've worked with that continue to be moderate to severe, more severe in the autism spectrum, and some kids have gone to college. And law school. I have a young boy I worked with at 3 who was fairly nonverbal and engaged in significant tantrums, and he just graduated Stanford University. And so, right. However, some of those kids, while academically successful, were not necessarily successful in, like, their adaptive independent living skills, right? Not taking good care of themselves, not able to manage their personal life. And so it's so hard to know and confusing. So that's why I always talk about managing everyone's expectations, right? And so for that family, their goal was he was going to college no matter what, right? But he broke down after college socially and emotionally, and the family had to spend some time with that. So it's really looking at the spectrum. And so for Melanie, what we had to do was at one point we hoped she would go to college, right? Every parent wants their child to be independent.
Right.
But what does independent mean? And so the things that I always talk about are, one, are, I'm going to go back to those learning to learn skills, because you don't want your child to be dependent on an adult their whole life, right? And so can your child orient to the situation, observe what's going on, imitate and or make decisions based on what they see in their environment? Those, like, behavioral kind of skills, like those very meaningful skills, are huge. And then on the other side of that is, can your child independently care for themselves, right? Can they get up and get dressed? Can they have reasonable hygiene? Can they start to manage their time? And so it's really like these two tracks that you have to balance. Like, we have toggled back and forth with those for Melanie. Like, we might overly focus on her adaptive skills and then go, whoops, we have got to go back and work on these like social emotional skills. And it's sort of always going back and forth and engaging like where we're at and what our next steps are going to be.
Wow, it's so important. And it's actually really telling that the structure that you're referring to has been created over time in your mind, right? Like, you've been there, you've done it, you've felt it out, and there is a combination. None of us exist in a single straight line. There are so many pieces that have to be pulled together. And focus, it's hard to focus on so many areas at once. So very often we'll focus on one area and then be, oops, I see a huge deficit coming up on the right. And we'll have to get in there and then start targeting that. You're always so positive. Can you share some of the challenges that you faced and what your frame of mind is and what your go-to mantra is to help you get through those tough days and focus onward in such a positive manner?
Sure. Oh my gosh. Yes. It's funny you say I'm so positive. There are days when I'm like, it was funny early on in living with Bill and Melanie, I felt like a failure all the time because I couldn't, like, I'm like, I know the strategies, but the strategies aren't working right now. Why aren't they working? Like, I'm a BCBA and I've done this for a long time. Like, why isn't this working? And one thing I never factored in, I should say this, is the amount of guilt, frustration, happiness and sadness parents feel raising a child, right? Like, Melanie is the funniest person I have ever met. Her, if you get her wit, you get her dry sense of humor and kind of embrace it, it is, you can very much enjoy your time with her. She's also incredibly stubborn. And I've met a lot of kids like this, right? She's incredibly stubborn. She does not like to identify as having any kind of need. Okay. However, no, at times we'll recognize she needs a need, but a lot of times we'll not recognize she needs a need. For example, we still struggle sometimes with hygiene, and she's 33. She does so many things well. She has a job, it's part-time. They are aware of her unique needs, and so they've scaffolded and support her. She lives in her own apartment. She does not accept anyone in her apartment for support. So it is falls on her regional center person who sees her four times a year, and her dad and I to scaffold her and her sister who lives out of state. And we have to do a lot of scaffolding. And there are times when we lose our cool. As a matter of fact, more often than not, if we're in her apartment, she's not organized and it's not very clean, and we have to go in and help clean it. We get in massive fights. And at 33, we still have reinforcement system in place, but it ends up things like, we were going to go to the movies, but we're only going to go to the movies if you come down and clean clothes, if you come out of your apartment and clean clothes and having showered and have hygiene. Like, we're still battling those things. And I can think of the other day, I picked her up to take her to a doctor's appointment and her shirt was inside out. And you know, that's one of those moments where I go, all right, I'm in a hurry. I'm in between appointments for my own job, rushing her to an appointment. Now I have to have her change her shirt from inside or out. Am I going to do this battle or not?
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to do the battle because I'm taking her to a new doctor and the tag's hanging out, the pocket's on the wrong way.
Right.
And I say, your shirt's on inside out. And her answer to me was, shut up, who cares? Right. And so I go, what am I going to do now? And so I had to make that decision. And so I'm not very positive. And I say, I'm not leaving until you change, fix your shirt. And she says, you always tell me what to do. I'm an adult. You can't tell me what to do. Right. And you're not even my mother.
Right.
Right. So those are the days where I'm like, oh, not very positive.
Wow. And those are real struggles, right? When you're pressed for time and there's something going on and you kind of have to face this one because you really can't show up by the doctors like that.
Right.
But there's some kind of mantra that you go by or some kind of positive focus of looking toward the future that you're able to take today in stride.
Yeah. You know, I credit a lot of that actually to my husband, who has a very funny, positive outlook on life. And we do tag team each other. Like, one thing that we do It happened on Sunday, actually, when we were at her apartment. He started to lose his cool. And when I see he's losing his cool, I know I need to step in and just kind of give him a break and just like, go over here, I've got this. And then I, in a rare moment, lost my cool and kind of like had some harsh words and kind of had a little fit. And he stepped in and was like, why don't you, do you need to take a break? And it's, I said, I in fact do. And so I do think, you know, it's really hard to do this. It's hard to parent in this situation. It's harder. It's really hard. But, you know, it's taken years for us to get to this communication level because we've misstepped many, many times. But we have spent a lot of time talking about how we're going to manage when things aren't going the way we expected. Like we will, before we start something now, proactively. Years ago, it was reactive. You know, why did you do that? You shouldn't have done that. You ruined everything. You know, you didn't follow the strategies. Now we go in and go, okay, how are we going to manage this? Because it's not going to go. We know it's not going to go well. What are we going to do? And when it doesn't go well, we will usually separate and take some break and then go back and say, okay, we did that really bad. How are we going to do it right the next time? And we do that a lot.
So it sounds like open communication and working it through, being honest where you're at.
Yeah.
Also being honest of your own shortcomings, it's huge, right? It's relationship building, and sometimes it's two steps backwards.
Yep.
And then you do end up coming forward a nice couple of steps. And it really sounds like the combination of your perspective and your communication has really brought you as a family to help Melanie as much as possible.
Yeah. And I think being, if I'm reflecting as a BCBA, one of the things that I always try to talk to BCBAs about is allowing parents to be in that space. And I can remember panicking as a BCBA, trying to figure out that balance, right? Where a parent would just say, we're all having a bad day today. We just can't do the goals or we can't follow the program. And I remember going, okay, I understand. I totally get it. But when that went on for too long, in my mind, too long, right? Okay, now I'm 3 and 4 days in and you're not following the program and right, you're not following the strategies. Like, how long can I allow this to go? And I don't know that answer, except that I do know there are some times when parents are going to just say, we just can't do it right now. And I've got to pivot and work on something else. But then there are times when I'm going to say, okay, let's think about how long we're going to let this go. Like being able to have those open dialogues with families without judgment is really important.
I think that one thing that's really striking about your relationship is that you're able to embrace her. You're able to see Melanie's positivity, her wit, and appreciate her, enjoy her company, not only look at and focus on the deficits or the things that you wish she would be better or the things that you've been targeting for a really long time, and really loving her, knowing, setting up that relationship in a way that she really knows that you're behind her, that she's a very important part of your life, loving her and embracing her, even with the deficits that she has, enables her to feel secure and continue to make progress, right? Because you spoke before about how when she was 18, she might not have been able to do things, but at 33, she can do more than that. I think that's huge. That's really loving her for who she's at today, still working on more for tomorrow, but without that pressure or guilt that as a professional, you're not doing as much as you can for your stepdaughter.
Oh, you said that so well. Yes.
Oh, good. I have a couple of quick questions. I'm wondering if you'd be okay with.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. When you were a child, what did you think you were going to do when you grew up?
Oh, I thought I was going to be a doctor, maybe even like a neurosurgeon.
Cool. And who could you say directly influenced your career choice, or was there nobody? It just was a trajectory that happened on its own.
It was a trajectory on its own, but influenced by both my mother having us volunteer. And then also a friend I met in grad school, because I thought I was going to go into more like counseling psychology. And she was the one who got me my first job at the nonprofit that was helping, where we were helping the adults live on their own. So she was the one who got me that job and started me on that trajectory. Her name is Tina Gill, and she lives in North Carolina, has her own ABA company.
That's great. Wow. So you both really went far with this.
Yes.
If you had a wild animal for a pet, which would you choose?
It would definitely be a sloth, because sloths crack Melanie up. She loves sloths. She will call us sloths if we're taking too long to do something. And so definitely a sloth.
So having one on display wouldn't be a bad idea for you.
Right.
Okay. Which model car can you see yourself driving when you're 90 years old?
Oh, it's got to be an old classic red Mercedes convertible from like the 60s.
And who would you say is your personal hero?
It would be Dr. Joseph Donnelly. He is a Harvard trained pediatric neurologist. He used to work in Massachusetts. He moved to California and I moved to California, and he has been my mentor for 20 years.
Wow. So there's never an end to mentorship.
Exactly. Yep.
Always learning from someone bigger and better.
Yep.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time, Kelly. Greatly appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us at Mastermind's Parent Power Podcast, where we aim to support, inform, and inspire parents with children diagnosed with ASD. For more information on how we can best help your child, check out our website at www.mastermindbehavior.com or give us a call at 732-813-7333. We're happy to help.